You're about to listen to the Complete Developer Podcast, the podcast by coders, for coders, about all aspects of life as a developer.
I'm Will, the curmudgeonly experienced developer.
And I'm Beege, the optimistic newbie developer.
Complete Developer Podcast is supported by listeners like you. We are now on Patreon at www.patreon.com/completedeveloperpodcast.
This one goes out to all the ones we've lost. This week, we are discussing how people process loss. Given enough time, you, someone close to you, or someone in your workplace will experience a major loss in their life. It's important to understand the grieving process, as not only is it part of being an adult, but understanding how people process grief is also critical to avoiding situations that make it worse. We've recently lost a friend to cystic fibrosis, and therefore we'll be talking through our own experiences of this process. We're also recording this on Memorial Day, which is a day to remember those our country has lost in combat. But before we get started, Will, what have you been fighting this week?
I have been dealing with the last little bits of a baseless merge at work with the product that I'm working on. Apparently, in early 2014, they forked the repositories, you know, so it, like ours, you know, they basically diverged, and then they switched source control systems. And then we went on developing. And so now we're kind of paying the price of that because we're having to merge and we don't have a base for it.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty horrendous. I worked pretty hard last week. We got the really big, nasty chunks out of the way, but there's going to be some small, you know, mopping up action. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, people fix stuff like in the data access framework that the main site uses. They fixed it differently over there than they did in our side. We've got to figure out which one's better, you know, which one, you know, is cleaner or whatever, and then use that. And we got to test both products after this. And so it's going to be pretty nasty. We're trying to get it out. It's supposed to hit testing this week. So with any luck, that will be done. I'm also getting ready for Music City Code, which means that I have spent a fair bit of time over the last couple of days trying to get ahead for the week. Just, you know, like the newsletter and, you know, I had some emails to do and I had, you know, various things around the house that needed to get done because, you know, Thursday and Friday, I'm not going to be of any use whatsoever. Honestly, I don't think Wednesday I'll be a whole lot of good either because we'll have to be getting ready Wednesday night and all that. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. It's not, you know, it's nothing too bad. It's just there's a lot of it. So how about you?
Since it is Memorial Day, I spent today out on Elk River canoeing with strangers. I made some new friends and got some sun. Of course, that was before we all got drenched in a sudden downpour that is quite typical of Tennessee weather. Will's already mentioned it. Since this episode is going to be coming out much afterwards, we are in the final preparations for Music City Code. I'm excited for the conference. I've already selected the talks that I want to attend, gotten a couple of episodes ahead so that we have episodes to be published while we're at the conference and stuff and not have to worry about that for the next week. The only frustration I have is that some of the talks I want to go to are at the same time.
Yeah.
So I have to pick one. And so that's kind of frustrating. But I have something kind of cool that Will sent to me for IoTs, so let's go ahead and roll the music. This week for IoTs, I have an Agate LED nightlight. While this project isn't directly Internet of Things, you can make it so simply by adding an Arduino or some other controller to it, to put a timer on it, or make an alarm clock out of it. There's a lot of different things that you can do with this project to make it Internet of Things.
Yeah, when I looked at it, I was thinking, you know, if you had multiple LEDs in there and a Arduino board, you could actually tie it to some other data source. And so, like, if the weather, like, tie it to a weather feed.
Yeah.
And change the color. Depending on what the outside
that is a neat weather idea. Would be.
And I was looking at that going, I never think of ideas with IoT, but I thought of that. that's why I awesome. Forwarded it to you.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's an interesting project from Instructables that uses an agate block that you drill a hole into and add LEDs. And this makes a nightlight like we talked about, though. You can do lots of other things. There will be a link to it in the show notes. So if you guys do build anything with it, send us an email with some pictures. Let us or contact us on social media and let us know because we might talk about it on the show. Who's talking to us this week?
Well, we grabbed an iTunes review from Katie something. Says, I'm so glad to have discovered this podcast. It's packed with technical information and practical advice, but the show hosts also offer insightful discussion aimed at helping developers of all levels cultivate well-rounded professional identities. The show is thoughtful, well-organized, and entirely engaging. I highly recommend it to anyone with even a passing interest in software development.
Thanks for the comment, Katie. We really appreciate the kind words on iTunes. Send us an email to neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com with your contact information because we've got a Complete Developer water bottle just for you. And guys, if you'd like your very own Complete Developer Podcast water bottle, leave us a review on iTunes or comment on the website or any of our social media. We post all our episodes to Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Google+. We're also on Path and Tumblr, and if you guys have not noticed, this is the second week we've done it, but we have started Facebook Live feeds on the Monday nights that we record, and occasionally we'll be doing them on the Wednesdays right before we post an episode.
Yeah, and we're just starting on this, so we're still kind of finding our feet, so it may be a little rough for a few minutes.
Yeah, but check us out probably around 6 to 6:30 Central Time. Every Monday night, we'll be on posting. Feel free to ask questions. If your question doesn't get answered in the live feed or you don't make it, send us an email with a question, and we will try to answer those on those live feeds.
So we're basing this episode loosely on the Kubler-Ross stages of grief. That's as outlined in Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's book on grief and grieving. We're also going to talk a lot about our own experiences going through this ourselves as we recently lost our friend, Jason Benton, to cystic fibrosis. That was April 2nd.
Yeah.
We kind of waited a little bit of time for the grief to get a little bit less raw so that, you know, because that's just, it would have been hard to do this episode, you know, second week of April.
Not only was Jason our friend for quite a long time.
15 years in my case, and what, close to 30 in yours?
Right at 30, I think. He was 5 and I was 6 when we met.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But he was also a huge supporter of the podcast.
Yeah, just and of us in general.
That's true.
You know, because like when you told him we were having a podcast, he started listening to it when episodes dropped at midnight, yeah. You know, and it wasn't like we asked him to. It was, he sat up and he listened to make sure that there wasn't audio glitches or anything funky, mm-hmm. just to help his friends out.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that kind of guy. And we wanted to kind of mention that because it kind of makes it clear the quality of person we lost and the quality yeah. of friend. And that sort of, I guess, puts it in perspective a little bit. So you kind of know where we're coming from on all this.
A little bit from the bit of the eulogy that I got to do. But Jason was the type of friend that would watch a TV show he didn't even like just because it was your favorite so he could talk to you about it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of person he was. And that's the friend we lost.
Yeah.
Just so that everybody understands kind of, he and I, we grew up together. And then you met him when I was in college and
yep.
stayed friends with him ever since. Let's go ahead and get started.
Yeah. So there's a few things, you know, we get into the stages of grief. I think everybody's probably had this discussed at some point, but there's a few things to understand. First of all, it's, you know, they call it stages, but it's iffy about that. It's not perfectly linear. Yeah. And they blend a little bit at the edges. It's almost like these are clusters of emotions that you have around an event like this versus you're moving linearly through them or something along those lines.
They're more like rooms in a open home, you know, where they've got like the double doorways to like the living room, dining room, kitchen, like all that. That's kind of what these are, where you can kind of be in one and in the other at the same time, and you can see things in the other rooms. You can move between them. It's not, you don't pass from one to the next to the next to the next, like in the cartoons, but you may flow back and forth through these.
The other thing is this is not, you know, the stages of grief are not necessarily just a response to a death. They can be a response to things like the end of a long-term relationship. I know you went through a lot of this when your marriage ended.
Yeah, it's very true.
And there were some other, you know, there's some other events right around the same time too. I've been through similar things with some things in my past. And it's interesting how the emotional trauma kind of plays out the same way, really, regardless of what you're doing. It's the same shape. It's just the magnitude.
That's very true.
Because I've seen people go through a lot of these honestly when their life has changed for the positive. It, just because it was just a shock, you know, a culture shock. It's how you
really shouldn't feel a surprise. It's more, it's less stages of grief and more stages of change.
Yeah. Or it's adaptive strategies for change that you alternate through. It's sort of like the, you know, if some combative martial arts, you know, they kind of group their techniques in, mm-hmm. in different ways. And it's like, well, if you're in a fight, you're doing all those.
Yeah.
You're shifting between them based on the circumstances. And that's probably a better way to think about it. But, you know, she kind of had to get that out there as stages because otherwise it was, you know, she had to change the conversation about how grief is mm-hmm. processed.
That's true. And of course, back, when this was written, a lot of the literature had to deal with different stages you go through and breaking those down to learn more about each individual one. So to do that, you had to create distinct stages.
Yeah.
But she's very clear about how you will pass back and forth. They're not a linear pattern. And another thing too is that they're probably going to happen more than once.
Yeah.
About the same loss. Even.
Yeah, it'll hit you again. I mean, it's almost like a tether ball coming back around.
Though each time it gets, you know, the tether on that ball gets a little bit shorter.
Yeah.
And it's a little less intense.
Yeah, because I mean, I know, you know, even in the last few weeks, you know, we've had comments that we've made on the show and I've thought, and I'm sure you've thought the same. It's like, oh, Jason will find this funny when he hears it. Because like that's still, and you know, that kind of starts it again.
Yeah, there have been a couple of times. Well, I even posted on Facebook about one where he was a big fan of The Big Bang Theory. I watched it. It's not bad, but it really wasn't my kind of show. But he really enjoyed it, so I watched it so I could talk to him about it. And I hadn't watched in a while. So I saw a scene. I saw Sheldon and Amy kiss for the first time. And if you know the show, that is like huge, huge. And my very first thought was, oh my God, I need to text Jason.
Yeah.
And then it hit me that I couldn't. And that, I said this to you, I said it to his mom and to most of our friends, was like, it's going to hit me in a month or two when something happens and I really want to tell him because that's what we did. Like,
yeah,
things happened and we texted each other or we called each other, stuff like that. That, or I'm going to want to go out and go see a movie, you know, and you know, Jason's not going to be able to go.
The other thing is a lot of these... Yeah, a lot of these phases or different approaches, they kind of happen as the loss becomes imminent. Like when you discover that, hey, it's going to happen. Because I know, you know, you and I both went through that, you know, when he was sick, when he was in the when he was in the hospital and, you know, it wasn't looking good. And, you know, we were both talking. And it's like, well, he'll pull through. He'll pull out of it, you know.
Well, he always did.
Yeah, he always did before. Yeah. But, you know, you kind of get into the bargaining thing. And, you know, we'll discuss that here in a minute. But. Like that, the lead up to it happening and with your, you know, with your divorce, mm-hmm. it was the same. It was the same kind of thing when my grandfather died, you know, it's just, you know, keep thinking, okay, well, he, you know, it's, he's gonna get better. He's gonna recover. And, you know, they don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, another thing too, with this is you see this a lot with cancer patients or terminally ill patients where they will go through these.
Yeah.
Jason was going through this. His grandfather had passed away almost 2 years before he did. I remember they were trying to not have the funeral on the same day that his grandfather died.
Yeah.
So.
I remember that discussion as well. And, you know, it weighs on you. I mean, I'm sure that probably did not help him.
No.
You know, as far as like the pain and suffering does not make being ill yourself easier. And I don't know. Is there any kind of like, I mean, since you were a psychology major before you were a med student, before you were a software developer, is there any kind of breakdown as far as like how damaging loss is in terms of like the likelihood of illness or anything like that spiking as a result of it? Because, you know, you see a lot of caretakers, a lot of times a caretaker goes first or they go shortly after.
Well, there's a lot to that in part in the loss and part in the not having like, what do I do now?
Right.
Kind of thing. I've built the last several years of my life on taking care of this person. Now I don't have to do that. You know, there's also some survivor guilt along with that. There's a lot of factors involved with that. They have shown that grief and depression does increase the likeliness of illness. That's been shown in several studies. There's probably more out there on both sides of the fence that I don't know about.
Yeah. Well, it seems like there's more research every you know, every day.
Yeah.
Especially into this kind of stuff, because they're realizing the body-mind connection to such a degree that we learn a little bit more. Yeah. So I guess we might as well get into the phases.
Yes. The first phase, and again, these are not generally linear, but we're going to go through them in the order that Dr. Kubler-Ross wrote them. And this is the most common path that people go through, but you may not experience it the same way. The first one is denial. And denial is kind of it's a protective phase, helps to give us enough time to cope with the shock of change.
Yeah, it's basically the mind shutting down and going, no, this isn't happening. I'm going to go forward as if it's not happening so that I don't break under the pressure. And what ends up happening is, you know, initially the shock hits and you're trying in your head to say, okay, this isn't going to happen. This person isn't going to die. This relationship isn't going to end. I can, you know, like, we'll figure this out. There's another way around it. This can't be, you know, it can't be boxed in. And over time, what you'll end up doing is you'll start to accept the situation. That's like the beginning of the healing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know when Jason was really sick in the hospital, it was right around April 1st, he'd gone into the hospital really sick. It started to get better. Went and visited him. Actually sat and talked to him and stuff. And then I was planning on going back on Sunday. His mom called me. I was like, you better come see him. And so I went in.
Yeah, Saturday.
Like, yeah. I was like, you know, if this is an April Fool's prank, you know.
Yeah. Even though you knew.
Yeah.
Just based on, you know, the medical stuff going on. And of course, I didn't make it in until the 2nd.
Yeah.
And so I didn't get to talk to him. But yeah, I guess the denial phase is probably best thought of as your mind's reaction to try to put a brake on the pain.
Huh. Well, I mean, I asked you if you wanted to go with me Thursday or Friday before that. And you're like, you know, I'll wait till he starts getting better.
Yeah.
Because he always got better.
Yeah. Well, and I had it in my head he would.
Yeah. And so you were like, and then even when I called you.
And I didn't want to be in there like in the way in the hospital and, you know, like he needs to sleep and get his strength back. And so, you know, you're kind of you're in that head, but like you also realize it's pretty serious.
Yeah. Well, I know after I went and saw him Saturday, I texted you. Then Sunday when we had
our quarterly meeting that afternoon.
Didn't we have something Saturday? You were going to try to come out Saturday and you didn't make it. Do we have a developer launch pad?
Might have.
Yeah. Because you were going to try to make it out Saturday and you didn't. You just weren't able to arrange it to get there.
Yeah, and I can't remember what the deal was. Might have had family in town, too.
Yeah, I think that might have been it. But then after I went and visited him, like, I went Saturday during the day and he was okay, and then Saturday night.
Yeah, and that's when you texted me and said, hey, if you know, you need to get out here. If you're going to.
And then you and I went out there Sunday and sat with his family for a little bit and kind of said our last goodbyes, because we knew that, about an hour after we left, that his mom texted me.
It was pretty obvious when we were there.
Yeah.
That was imminent. Like when we left, it was time for the people that weren't family to not be in the room.
Yeah. Well, I just remember getting back to talking about denial. When I texted you and said, if you want to see him, you need to get out here.
Yeah.
You were like, you didn't believe me at first.
Yeah.
Cause you were like,
well, and it's also, it happened on April Fool's, which didn't help, because we also, we're both kind of pranksters. And so we're like, you know, you kind of.
Yeah.
Look at that. You know, we also had you and I both had a good friend that died on April 1st.
Mm-hmm.
It's been over a decade now. And, you know, when that news came out, nobody believed it. But, you know, it's what it ended up being. And it's a strange thing because, you know, crap, I knew better. When he, you know, when you were telling me the medical stuff that he had told you as far as, like, you know, his, like, the O2 level readings and all that kind of stuff, it was pretty clear. It's like, yeah, that's not good, but I mean, I still had it in my head. It's like, oh, he'll recover. You know, he's at Vanderbilt, a really good hospital. You know.
Oh yeah, you had that denial that, and it wasn't until we were going to go to our quarterly meeting, and I was like, hey, I just want to stop by here.
Right, yeah.
Before that, you know, you're like, okay, I should probably go in, because like when I'm like, I want to hold off on our meeting until I go do this. you knew something was up.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're slow going to the beer and the chicken wings, that's usually, I mean,
yeah,
no offense, man, that's a sign.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
That only means one thing. You know, the next phase is the anger phase, and that's typically, you know, manifests as a reaction to powerlessness. I mean, that's the biggest reason why people get angry is they can't control something, and that's your body's and your mind's reaction to getting enough force to control things.
Mm-hmm.
And our society is not very good at processing anger, just as a rule. Like, that's, you know, that's why you see protests that turn violent. You know, a lot of times is people don't go, okay, this person's angry, I'm not going to confront them. You know, I'm going to let it kind of steam out a little bit. And we just kind of have a deep cultural aversion to dealing with feelings of anger. And this is even more true around a loss type situation, because, you know, the most common thing people tell you on that is, well, you know, you just need to calm down and get over it. It's like, well, yeah, you do, but nobody ever calms down because you told them to. That's yeah. not a thing. that literally never happens.
What's interesting is, personally, I didn't go through much anger around this, mainly because, I don't know, Jason seemed a little bit different before going into the hospital
yeah.
this time. And he pretty much begged me to, like, come and hang out a lot before he went to the hospital. And yeah. had I not done that, I probably would have been really angry with myself. But I don't know. I mean, usually when he asked me to hang out, I'm all about it because...
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of... I have to admit, like, my feelings... Of course, the other thing, too, is I think I have a tendency to lean on anger a little bit more than you do.
Yeah.
And I was frustrated with him. I won't say I was straight up angry, but I was frustrated that he did not, you know, go to the doctor earlier.
Sooner, yeah.
And get, you know, it's like, because he could still be here. And it's hard not to be irritated at that, and I understand why it happened, but it's like that's hard to process.
And I think there are several members of his family that feel that way as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's common, and it's
part of it. And part of it for me is his grandfather was like a dad to him growing up.
Yeah,
and after his grandfather passed away from cancer, he gave up. Yeah, he didn't have the drive. Yeah. He tried. He made an effort to try and have that drive that he'd had before, but it was just gone. And I guess maybe that's why I the anger really wasn't there for me. I will say one thing that was interesting. I was talking with his uncle about just everything going on, and he made the comment that his mom, this was his mom's brother, but his mom and their side of the family and his dad and that side of the family had never really gotten along.
Yeah.
Ever since they split. And this was like, they split before I met Jason, if that says anything. You know, it was a long time ago, and they've not gotten over stuff and not gotten along since then. And there was that much animosity to the point that people were making comments about how civil everyone was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think too, you know, like I tend to rely on anger a little bit to avoid like depressive spiral.
Yeah.
I would rather spiral into anger because then at least I get stuff done. I can act on that. And I think there's a pretty good sized chunk of the population that's kind of similar, that like they get angry so that they're not just breaking down.
Yeah. And I went through this going through my divorce.
No, you didn't do that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely went through it there. And in some other things, kind of struggled a little bit in med school, starting right out, and went through a little bit of it. Almost ruined my relationship then when we're just engaged, but you know, it didn't at that point. And then, but I definitely went through the anger phase. Spent a lot of time there.
Yeah,
around then.
And the other thing too is a lot of times it'll come out at unrelated things.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like, anger has got a socially appropriate expression, you know, set of socially appropriate expressions, and then it's got a huge set of ones that are not. So you might find yourself, you're going to the funeral and you're upset about the situation, but you're just like furious at people in traffic.
Didn't that happen to another friend of ours that was driving?
Seems like it. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the other pallbearers.
Oh yeah.
But you and I rode to the graveside service with him, And, oh,
man. Yeah.
He was just, like, I've never seen him get...
No, he's like, never mad at anything.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, like, the most chill dude. And, of course, you know, we were fairly relaxed. And so, when he's snapping, you know, you and I are looking at each other like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I don't know how to deal with him when he's angry because I've never seen it. And I've known him for 15 years.
Yeah. I've known him for 20-something.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a pretty common manifestation of the grief as it's, you know, works its way through is just you're snapping at people. I mean, the other thing, too, is you don't get as much sleep. It's not as quality of a sleep. You're grieving. You know, there's all the... You know, there's all the biochemical stuff that happens with that. And yeah, so you tend to be a lot shorter with other people.
You know, an interesting thing, that same friend kind of made a jerk of himself, is the PG version of what I want to say, at my wedding.
He was a little bit more than a jerk, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was funny. It wasn't pointed at me.
Yeah. Turns out he had suffered a major loss.
Yeah.
Right before that. None of us knew about it.
Yeah.
Because it happened like the week before. None of us knew. He didn't want to put a damper on the festivities and tell people. So we didn't know. All we knew was he came down to New Orleans and was just like a completely different person.
Yeah. I remember that. That was interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, his wasn't anger as much as it was just like acting out. Maybe that was his way of being mildly angry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people like that too they'll kind of be a little bit, you know, like goofy or something when they're ticked off, and like that's how they cover it. But, you know, your relationship to anger becomes very obvious when you have a major loss.
Mm-hmm. Next is bargaining. And this is where you try and tell yourself that it won't happen if you just change something. Could be your behavior, could be if, you know.
Yeah, and I remember this a lot from, you know, the last downhill run of both my grandfather and my step-grandmother was thinking, okay, you know, they're getting worse and it's obvious it's not going to be all that long. I need to come down and visit more often and maybe I can cheer them up and, you know, maybe I can fix this.
Yeah.
And it's, so you're not necessarily bargaining with them you're bargaining with death, you know, is pretty much the way that process goes forward. And, you know, this is where all the, you know, like if it's after the event, this is also where all the what ifs happen. So it's like, well, what if, you know, what, like you, I think you went through this because you were like, what if that Wednesday before he had to go to the hospital, if I could have taken a day off of work and taken him to the doctor?
Yeah.
You know, and the what ifs of, you know, like, I mean, that's something that you go back to pretty much on every major loss like that. You know, cause I can remember thinking, you know, we had a dog up until a few years ago and she had a little bump on her. And I thought the other day, I was like, you know, what if I had taken her to the vet earlier? You know, now what ended up happening is that particular bump was not the cancer that ended up getting her. But, you know, it's like, well, what if I had taken her and they'd found it anyway? And you kind of go through this quite a bit. I know you did with your divorce.
I did.
And I mean, you were really trying to negotiate out of the pain.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
I mean, with everyone, like I was trying to negotiate with my ex-wife to not leave for the longest time, just anywhere I could, you know, and.
Well, you were trying to get stuff together and you're like, okay, well, maybe if I get, if I get back into med school and, you know, I've got everything, you know, kind of like I need it to be, you know, then she won't get any more angry and maybe I can win her back.
Yeah.
You know, I remember those discussions with you. And, you know, there were some other things, you know, that were going on around the same time. And it was very similar. And this is kind of where the survivor's guilt tends to hit you. You know, it's like, okay, well, I wish I had spent more time with this person. And this was one that got me the other day. I was cleaning out a box in the basement. And one of the things that Jason did for a while was, you know, because you know, he had cystic fibrosis, and so he couldn't hold down a regular job. But you could pay him, and he would take like your home VHS movies and rip them to DVD for you. You know, because that was something he could do. You know, it was kind of automated. He would make sure it got right, but it wasn't something that required him to necessarily be able to be very mobile and breathe a lot. Yeah.
And the other thing he'd do is he'd go in and put chapters in for you.
Yeah, and like, this is going to sound bad. I have a VHS copy of The Hobbit. Like the cartoon version.
Yeah.
From like the 70s. And I heard the DVD version sucks. They left a couple of the, you know, like the background tracks off, and it's not like the Amazon reviews are really bad. And I was going to get Jason to rip that over to DVD for me. And I was going to get him to do that since, like, what, 2008? And I found that VHS tape the other day, and I was like, and I just looked at it for a couple of minutes. I just sat there, and I was like, man, you know, if I, you know, and it wouldn't have changed anything, but it's like the opportunity missed.
Oh,
and it's just like, it's like a punch in the gut. You never know when it's coming.
I understand. I found he had been recording, like, when I started watching Doctor Who, because I didn't start in 2005. It was several years later. He started recording the episodes for me. And then soon after my divorce, he, in an attempt to cheer me up, knowing that Doctor Who was my go-to that cheered me up, he had gone back and gotten a hold of every single episode from season one all the way up to where he had started recording for me.
Yeah.
And put all of them, including the ones that he recorded for me, into a leather-bound DVD case.
Oh, man.
And gave it to me. And the other day, I was cleaning stuff out, and I found that, and I was like,
yeah.
Because I've got them all on I've got them all on demand or DVR or, you know, however.
Yeah.
At home now, but if they ever decide to not be on demand anymore, then I've got the DVDs that he had made for me, at least up through season 9.
And, you know, I've, like with my grandfather, you know, he and my step-grandmother, when I was 15, they gave me a Super Nintendo game that I still play with my daughter.
That's awesome.
And, you know, it's Final Fantasy III. And I still play that with my daughter. And so, like, literally, that's in the Super Nintendo. And every time I walk in that room and see that, I think about my grandfather. And, you know, you kind of go through this in the bargaining phase. Just a whole lot of, you know, a whole lot of what ifs and a whole lot of, you know, wow, I really missed this opportunity type of thing.
Talking about grandfathers, when I was a young kid, my grandfather used to pick me up and set me in his lap, and he'd show me his wedding band and said, if you get married before I pass away, because he always said he was going to pass away any minute now, you know?
Yeah.
But he was like, if you get married before I pass away, I'm going to give you this for you to wear. And then he said, if I pass away before you get married, I want you to have this.
Yeah.
I'm actually really glad, like, he passed away right before I started med school, and I'm really glad my grandmother wasn't able to find the ring when I got married, because she found it, like, maybe a month or two after I got married, because she'd been looking for it and just couldn't remember where she'd put it. So I didn't actually have that as part of my ring, and now I wear it as on a necklace. I haven't taken it off since she gave it to me.
Yeah. Well, in the next phase is depression, which I know some of you are probably feeling when you're listening to this episode, because there's really no way to make this cheerful.
Yeah, even telling funny stories kind of comes out.
Yeah,
a little bit of a downer.
So, like, you know, you start out and you start out in denial, and that's where you're, like, focused on the future, and then, you know, the anger thing is a focus on the past. Bargaining is
kind of focused on the now.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a little bit of a focus on the future or focus. It's not focus on the here and now. It's focus on an alternate now. But depression is what happens when you start getting focused on the present. During the phases of grieving, you'll hear a lot of people go, "Okay, well, you know, you got to get over it. You got to get past this." And I'm here to tell you that doesn't really happen. The depressive phase is part of the picture. It is a reasonable reaction to a bad thing that's happened, to a loss.
Well, within psychology and psychiatry specifically, there's a actual marked difference between normal grief, extended grief, and
full major depression. Yeah.
Because normal grief tends to last, you know, at maximum around 6 to 8 months.
Right.
Your extended grief, that's something for, like, what my grandmother felt after my grandfather passed away. They'd been together for over 50 years.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah. That's not going to be something that's gotten over in 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's literally 1/100th of the time that they were together married, and they probably dated for a few years before that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when it's sort of persistent for more than 2 years, is when it becomes major depression. And one thing that I really liked about the doctor, the family practice doctor I had when I was living in Cookeville, is I was going through this, Yeah, I ended up taking antidepressants going through my divorce.
Yeah.
Because
it's good you did.
Yeah, it really was. It was a let's level you off. Let's get you to a point where we can start working on getting you better.
Right.
And it was because it wasn't a chemical imbalance. It was a legitimate, I've had bad things happen and now I've got to deal with them.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the big thing. This kind of depression is different.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't diagnosed as depression. That's what I liked is he diagnosed it as adjustment disorder with depressed mood. Where I was adjusting to a major life change.
Well, you were adjusting to about four of them.
Well, that's true, but that was, you know.
Oh, yeah. Because it wasn't just the marriage. It was med school. It was moving back home. It was some other things. And yeah, I mean, it packed a wallop on you, legitimately. And this is about the point where, you know, we started talking about, you know, you getting into software development.
Yeah. What I tell people is you and he who shall not be named were both, like, oh, hey, trying to get me to do some coding challenges, some fun things just to give me something to focus on.
Yeah.
Because I won't say I developed razor sharp focus, but I developed a rather pinpoint focus in med school.
Yeah.
And all of that was turned on to
your problems.
My problems, yeah. And you guys were like, all right, let's give him something that's going to make him think enough.
Yeah, well, we couldn't afford enough beer to get you focused off of it. So it's like, we've got to point this somewhere else.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is different than a normal depression. It is a normal reaction to a loss.
Yeah.
You know, they're using the same word here, but it doesn't mean the same thing. You know, honestly, if somebody dies or you have like a major loss in your life and you don't
feel sad
or feel upset about it, like that's fairly disturbing.
I think the term, and here's the thing, in psychology, psychiatry, there is major depression and depression.
Right.
But culturally and, you know, in normal conversation, people don't make that distinction. Like if I said depression to a doctor or a psychologist, they would be thinking one specific thing.
Well, it's like lethargic.
Yeah.
If you tell, you know, a layperson that somebody was lethargic, that means, okay, they were asleep and I had a hard time waking them up. Or they're, you know, they're not overly responsive. Whereas if you tell a medical professional that, they think that, okay, they're unconscious and they can't move.
Well, what I was going to say was it really should be called, instead of depression or depressive stage.
Recessive? No. That's economics.
Yeah.
There's another way to put it.
Depressed mood.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is. It's... In the terminology of the average person that doesn't have a medical background or a psychological background, depressed mood makes more sense. So I know there's a big push, and I see this on Facebook a lot, but there's a big push to get people to understand that depression is not, oh, I'm feeling down, but it's like a debilitating, crippling disorder of, I literally do not have the energy to get out of bed today.
Yeah.
You know, and that is major depression.
Of course, you will see this with, you know, you'll see this especially with like widows, you know, widowers too. Because I remember my grandfather was kind of like this, you know, after my step-grandmother passed. He didn't want to get out and do stuff for a while. It's just, I think part of it too is you almost get into, especially if you're really close with somebody, you're almost in the phase where it's like if I step out and I do something fun, I feel like I am denigrating this person because like I should still be mourning. You know, I mean, there's that. And then there's also the, you know, the down feeling and you can't overcome it.
Well, it was like pulling teeth to get me to go out for a while there. And that is not me.
Normally. Oh, you mean like right after your divorce?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I had to be like the social butterfly and stuff. And that is not my place.
you had to like play the me role, and I was playing the you role from college, where you were like, I don't want to go out. And,
yeah,
you know, not that you were depressed, you were just
I was.
Yeah,
college was not an overly happy time for me, but that's how it works, and it's something that has to kind of you have to work through it, but it has to go on its own timeline. Mm-hmm. It's like a pregnancy; it doesn't get better because you rushed it.
Yeah.
You know, that I mean, that's the best way to put it. It's like if, you know, you go, okay, well, it's going to take 9 months. Well, can we get it done in 7? Like, that's not really the way that works. You know, it goes pretty bad when you do that.
It's important to go through this phase.
Yeah.
I mean, I get where you're going with you don't want to rush it, but
it's important to get through. It's not necessarily important to get through on a particular timeline. So it's more of a thing of, okay, I need to head in this direction until I get wherever I'm going at whatever speed I can go.
Well, I remember I started seeing the doctor here, in Cookeville, here in Tennessee, in Cookeville. And he changed the medication that I was on. And we didn't have to titrate up too far, but we titrated up just a little bit. And I was going in every 2 weeks to see him. I came in 1 week and he just looked at me and said, I can tell the medicine's working. It's like, how? It's like, you're smiling.
Yeah. She's standing like, up straight.
And he's like, I haven't seen you smile since you started coming here.
Yeah.
I was like, really? I think that was right around the time I started apprenticing with you, and I had gotten a job here in Nashville doing sales.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he said, well, it looks like the medicine's working. Let's start, now that you're at a place where we can work on it, let's start working on the issues. And we did. I was still going in for several weeks. And then he said, okay, let's spread this out instead of coming in every week at that point. So instead of every week, let's make it every month.
Yeah.
And then we spread it out to like every 2 months. And he said, okay, well, it was like the next February. I think it was around like November or something. He said, okay, in February, I'm going to start titrating you off the meds.
Yeah.
It's like, 'cause I don't think you actually need them to get by. You needed them to get you through to the point you're at now.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the big thing with the depressive period is getting yourself into a position where you can do the things that help you pull out.
Yeah.
You know, that ultimately help you recover. And that typically does not mean, you know, staying at home alone, although it can, that's pretty unlikely. You know, you're going to need to start rebuilding your life and your interactions with other people and adjusting to the new reality.
That's true. Of course, part of that for me was staying home alone because I've been,
not alone.
Yeah.
Like you had to get to a, and that's why I said typically is that way. But in your case, you had to get used to not having somebody there.
That's true. With the divorce
and the loneliness and all that kind of stuff. And so that, you know, that it makes a difference.
Yeah. You know, I will say this, going back to kind of the theme of the episode, which is talking about our experience going through the loss of Jason. I knew that the hardest part, the depressive part, was going to hit me about a month or so later.
Yeah.
Just because I knew, all right, now.
Well, you guys had known each other long enough that your interactions kind of had a rhythm to them. And, you know, it's like there's a lot of superhero movies that come out a certain time of year, and there's a lot of certain other things that drop, you know, like different TV shows, and, you know, you both get time to go do things.
Yeah.
And it hits at a certain time of year, and that time of year was coming up, and you knew that when you hit that, you'd be hitting that by yourself.
Yeah, that's very true. And I will say this, I had a lot of great friends talking about getting out there that stepped up.
Yep.
You did. Our friend Erin that we had on the show a couple of times, like she'd never even met Jason, but knew how much he meant to the two of us.
Yeah.
And told me if I needed anything. And I was like, well, I'll tell you what I need. In about a month or so, I'm going to need someone to go see movies with me, because it's going to hit that there's a movie I want to see and Jason won't be able to go see it.
Yeah.
And you know what? We've been.
Well, Erin is just as much of a nerd as we are.
That is so true.
It helps so much on that.
Yeah. Because like we'll go see movies and then do exactly the same thing Jason and I would do. We like go get dinner afterwards and geek out about the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is, I told her the first time, I think we went and saw Guardians. And after the movie, I told her, I said, you know, Jason and I had a thing of going and seeing a movie the day it came out, because we went and saw it the Friday it came out. I was like, that was kind of our thing. I really appreciate you doing this. She's like, I love this. This is awesome. She's like, you know, I got someone to go see a movie with and we get to geek out about it.
Yeah.
You know, so it was great, but it helped. And even friends that didn't know him were stepping up.
And the last phase is, I guess, where we probably both are at this point. And that's the acceptance phase, although it's still kind of, it's still hard to remember that he's not around anymore.
Yeah.
Like you go, oh yeah, Jason would find this funny. And then you just, oh wait, no. It's not a thing, but, and the, you know, they call this the acceptance phase, and that it's doesn't mean that you're all right with it. Like, I would still rather have him here than not. And the phrase of being all right with something is not like, you're really not ever all right over a loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's you accept that you can't change it and that you know you have to go on and move forward.
Well, part of this is appreciating the time you had with the person.
Right.
For example, with my divorce, like I really would not say that I reached the acceptance phase until I was able to go, you know.
It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah. If I had it to do over again, I would still have, had the relationship because it was good while it lasted.
Although I think now if you met her again now, I don't know that she'd have a chance.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not sure how that, because it has changed you. Like you accept, it's not just that you accept that the relationship ended or the life ended. It's that you've sort of reintegrated the lessons from that. And, that's the big thing there. With Jason, it's the thing of, okay, if somebody I know is in the hospital and it does, when I first hear that it doesn't look good, I need to get out there. Because I didn't get to talk to him again.
Yeah.
I think the last time I talked to him was probably, it was somewhere between, I think when you got home and, when he was unconscious at the hospital. And, that was a period of a year and a half.
Yeah.
I wasn't
well, in a way you talk to him every week because.
Yeah. And I chatted with him on Facebook some and all that too, but like actual face to face.
Of course he would ask me about you.
Yeah.
Or like we'd hang out a couple of times a month. And he was always asking. The funny thing is, we would get ahead on recording.
Yeah.
And so the episode that dropped would be about 4 weeks behind what was actually going on. And all he knew about you for like a few months at a time would be that.
Yeah.
And then just there'd be like this random question. I'm like,
where'd that come from?
Yeah. It'd be about you. And I'm like, that happened like a month and a half ago. What are you talking about? He's like, well, you just said it this week.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. Now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because if he hadn't talked to you in that
or hadn't talked about that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You the acceptance phase is the point where you reintegrate, that loss and what you gained before then. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a whole. It's not a thing of, okay, I lost this person. And, it's not all the loss anymore. It's, well, I lost this person, but I had all these years with them and all these memories.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him making fun of you when you were playing Secret of Mana on the Super Nintendo at the old apartment. And you had named your characters a few inappropriate and foul things. And then you were like playing just horrendously bad. I remember him making fun of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And gosh, that was 15 years ago, easily.
Mm-hmm.
But you start to remember those things. And it's not just this whole of loss. It's that plus the other parts. Like you're now weighing them the same, or you're weighing the good things you got at a higher rate than the end.
I remember something he told me. I don't know if it was his mom or his grandma asked why he liked hanging out with us. Cause they're both so like just mean to you.
Not
they,
mean.
They pick on you and they make fun of you and all this stuff. And he told me about this. And he's like, I looked at her and said, yeah, but they treat me like I'm not sick.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is,
meant more to him than anything else.
And the thing is like we picked at him like we pick at each other.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Oh, well, he picked back too. Oh, there was no.
Yeah.
Oh man. If you heard the two of us playing Madden at any point in our friendship, you heard the two of us when we were playing Madden, you'd think we hated each other.
Yeah.
You really would because
you sounded like frenemies the whole time. and cause I remember that at the old apartment and the two of you would do that. And then I would say stuff to tick off one of you and the other one would start laughing and I would tick them off.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was just like, we had that banner going back and forth and you remember those things and that the end fades in comparison to that. Like, it's like the end when you're going through the cycles of grief, the end is the big thing you're focusing on, not what led this person to be that important in my life. And, that the acceptance phase is realizing that, okay, well, it's all this other stuff that mattered.
Yeah, that's very true. Like we said, this is the point where you come to appreciate the time you had with the person. I mean, kind of a different perspective is the divorce I went through.
Yeah.
And, it's easier for me to appreciate the time that I had with Jason than it was for me to appreciate the time I had with my ex. Because, you know, Jason was a loss in that we no longer have him here.
Well, you also
knew. My divorce was a loss. It's a different type of loss.
Well, and with Jason, you also knew it was going to end. I mean, yeah. Like, you knew the life expectancy and, you know, there was going to come a day. We all knew that. Whereas with the marriage, you thought it was permanent. I mean, the thing that got me with Jason, the hardest part that is still somewhat difficult to accept is I was a pallbearer at the funeral. And, you know, his mother and his grandmother asked for that. And I was not around him enough to deserve that. You know what I mean? Like, I had a lot of difficulty with that, you know, after that call, because it was one of those deals where it's like I was friends with him for a long time, but I was not there all that much. You know, I wasn't around enough. And
it was something that you did or said at my wedding that, like, I remember when we were in college, he was a little bit jealous of you.
Yeah.
Because you were my college friend and he, you know, couldn't go to college and stuff. But I don't know what it was that you did or said, but, like, he always liked you.
Yeah.
Even though he was a little jealous of, like, our friendship at times. But he always liked you. But something you did or said at the wedding, just it resonated with him. And, like, he always spoke really highly of you after that. And, you know, about how good of a friend you were.
Yeah. Well, and I realized, you know, like, getting into the acceptance phase, like, you, while you feel like you're kind of a crap friend and you've not been around enough to deserve to be in that place, like, the reason you're a pallbearer is because he wanted you to be, and his family wanted you to be. Like, the funerals are for the living.
That's true.
And, you know, kind of, like I said, that was really hard to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand that. You're not the only person to say that to me.
Yeah.
There's two of you that at one time or another had been close with him, but were not as close as.
Yeah. Well, I mean, lives got busy. I mean, the other one was the same deal. And yeah, I mean, like, the reintegrative thing there is to realize that, no, you know, you mattered enough to this person, and they, you know, they matter to you, and their family wanted you there as a comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's the reason you were a pallbearer. And that's the reason you were speaking.
Yeah. That's true. That's very true.
But yeah, it was tricky. And it's like you've got to accept that the new reality is permanent, and you've got to kind of rebuild your understanding of the world around a changed reality. That's what the acceptance phase does for you. Does to you.
So we've kind of discussed this throughout the episode, but Will and I have both been through these stages at different times in our lives and going through different losses. The big thing is, don't try to power through them.
Yeah.
Work through them at your own pace. And also understand that you may not go through them in the order that we described.
Yeah.
You may bounce around. I know I went going through several losses. Most impressive on me, I guess. Most recent that I can think of for bouncing around was the divorce.
Yeah.
Where I started with, you know, I went through denial and then bargaining and then anger and then some denial and then back to bargaining.
And then some depression.
And then some depression. And then anger.
And some and more
then,
bargaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I was all over the place going through that.
Yeah. You collected two or three sets.
Yeah.
On this
one. Of each. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
But you're not going to go through these in any particular order. And you can even revert back from acceptance to denial.
Yeah.
We kind of talked about this. It won't be as strong usually. You know, you may go through the phases all over again. I know I went through a mini one of those the very first time that I wanted to text Jason and couldn't.
Yeah.
Because my initial thought was, oh, I got to talk to Jason about this. Oh, wait, I can't.
Yeah.
No. And so, like, it was like, no, this can't really be happening. I can still talk to him. And then I was angry at myself for letting me do that.
Yeah. Or it's like when, you know, because I got angry again, like when, you know, I saw the Patreon money come in. I'm like, oh, we didn't take him off the thing. Gosh, what pieces of crap we are, you know. And just circling back around, it's like, you know, this is just completely understandable. And it's like, you can, you know, give the money back to his mother. It's not like it's that hard.
Yeah.
But it was very it's something that just circles back around. You know, you eventually, I think it eventually evens out enough where the pain isn't there as much.
Well, there's a saying that time heals all wounds.
Right.
And I think it's more...
Time heals all wounds that aren't mortal wounds.
Yeah, well...
But yeah.
Time dulls the wounds. And enough time dulls it enough to where you don't feel the pain, where you don't notice the pain.
Yeah, it just becomes part of the background.
Yeah. But when dealing with the loss of a friend or family member, it can be helpful to be around others, especially those that were close to him. But as we've mentioned, our friend Aaron, who's been on the show a couple of times, was there for me probably at the hardest part there, which was I wanted to go see a movie with Jason and couldn't. And I remember I texted her and I'm like, remember how you asked if there's anything you could do? I told her what happened. She's like, what time?
Yeah.
So even friends that weren't close with the person can be there for you. Just being around other people really helps. You know, this is also why our society has these large get-togethers around people's deaths.
Or around any transition in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why you also had things like infants getting baptized, or you have marriage ceremonies. You know, like, are all those people functionally necessary for anything? Well, they're not, but it makes the transition easier because it's a delineation between the old and the new.
That's very true. On that note, I felt a sense of closure just because I was able to speak at Jason's funeral. You know, his mom came up to me and was telling me about who was speaking. I said, well, if you want me to, I don't mind.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like I was able to represent the friends that he had.
Yeah.
And kind of our way of saying goodbye.
Of course, some of that too, that was the other thing at the funeral. Like, some of the goodbyes were really said in the car on the way to the burial.
That's really true.
Because it was, you know, we were a, you know, we all joked around and cut up together. Uh-huh. And you don't do that in a funeral home. And, you know, I remember, you know, we were joking some on the ride. It's like, mm-hmm. if Jason's a ghost in the car, he's going to be having a blast.
Yeah, that's so true. That was said a few times.
Yeah.
At some of the things we said. And also, another thing that it did for me was when I got up, I told stories. And I know several times I looked out and I saw, like, his mom laughing with a tear in her eye.
Yeah.
You know, because I was telling something goofy that we'd all done or something like that. And I really tried to capture the friendship, like the type of person he was in the stories. Yeah, to us, to his friends.
Yeah.
In the stories that I was telling. And it meant a lot. I had a lot of his family members come up and say it meant a lot. I know I talked to several of his friends and stuff and gotten...
Well, and you couldn't have really done it any other way.
No.
That was part of you getting closure. Speaking of closures.
Speaking of closure, that does kind of wrap us up. Before we close everything out, though, Will, what do you have for us this week for Tricks of the Trade?
Well, I know this episode was probably fairly depressing. It's not real easy to talk about death, and it's not real easy to talk about grieving. But I want to point something out to everybody going into software development or just doing it on a day-to-day basis. And that is that, you know, your day job and your career as a software developer lives in the ecosystem of other human beings' interactions. It's not the other way around. And as a result, that is the thing that has the power, not your software development. You really need to spend a lot of time cultivating relationships, and you need to value the relationships that you've cultivated. I've worked with 3 or 4 developers now that I got along well with at the jobs and had a pretty good rapport with them, and I didn't follow up when the job ended. And those developers are gone now. They won't, they're not going to be around. I've also worked with a very good recruiter who, he and I would go get lunch every month or two, and, he would fill me in on what was going on, what kind of jobs he was seeing, and I would fill him in on the tech stuff. So, answering his tech questions. He moved out of town, and I didn't follow up. I didn't keep that relationship alive as well as I should have. And I found out about 6 months after he passed that he had passed on, just sudden heart attack in the yard. And, you know, that really sucks. Like, you should always remember that the people are why we're here. It's not the, it's not the computer. It's not the programs. Like, I enjoyed writing code in Visual Basic 6, but I don't mourn the loss. You mourn the people that are gone. So always remember that your computer stuff and all the things that you're doing with all the tech are one organism in an ecosystem. The ecosystem is the people. And if the computers all stopped tomorrow, you would still have the people. But just think about that. Like, value the people over the code. That will pay off for you personally more than just about anything else. Plus, it's just a way better way to live. And that's all I got.
Stand by for Titanfall.
If you have a question or comment for us, please email us at neckbeards@completedeveloperpodcast.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Stand By for Titanfall by Pure Bells, available on SoundCloud and licensed under Creative Commons. The intro music for IoTs is Hillbilly Hip Hop by Jason Belcher. For references, show notes, and to sign up to our email list, be sure and check out the website at CompleteDeveloperPodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at CompleteDevPod and like our page on Facebook to keep up with the news about the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time.